We have an autocracy which runs this university. It's managed. We were told the following. If President Kerr actually tried to get something more liberal out of the regents in his telephone conversations, why didn't he make some public statement to that effect? And the answer we received from a well-meaning liberal was the following. He said, would you ever imagine the manager of a firm making a statement publicly in opposition to his board of directors? That's the answer. I ask you to consider, if this is a firm, and if the Board of Regents are the Board of Directors, and if President Kerr, in fact, is the manager, then I tell you something, the faculty are a bunch of employees, and we're the raw materials, but we're a bunch of raw materials that don't mean to be have any process upon us, don't mean to be made into any product, don't mean to end up being bought by some clients of the university, be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone. We're human beings.
That was Mario Savio, leader of the free speech movement at the University of California in Berkeley, 1964. The free speech movement had been called the first manifestation of the student movement in this country, which was to culminate 6 years later with the murder of four students at Kent State. Kennedy was dead. The Beatles had arrived. Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert were experimenting with LSD, and the South was ringing with demonstrations. Buddhist monks were setting fire to themselves in South Vietnam. Barry Goldwater and Nelson Rockefeller both struggled for the Republican nomination, while Lyndon Johnson, the peace candidate, set down the ground rules for bombing North Vietnam the following February. With the deaths of three civil rights workers in the South, the fight against racism moved onto the college campuses, and the student apathy, so typical of the 50s, changed into a new kind of activism. Bettina Apthecker, later to become a leader of the free speech movement, joined the Du Bois Club, a student socialist organization of the Berkeley campus.
In the Du Bois Clubs, we did, this is in 63 and 64, two things that I very clearly remember. One is that we organized some of the first protests against the war in Vietnam, which was already going on then, and Madame Nu, who was some relationship to Diem, she was married to his brother, something like that, so I think she was his sister-in-law. Madame Nu came to the Berkeley campus to appeal for continued U.S. support in South Vietnam. And if memory serves, it was in the fall of 1963, and the Du Bois Clubs organized a protest outside of Harmon Gym, which is where she was speaking. I think that's one of the first protests against the war in Vietnam in the United States. It was small, but, you know, we felt it was really important to say something about that. That was, before the massive commitment of U.S. troops. We were already supplying all the advisors and material support of one sort or another. And then in that same period, early in the fall of 63 and through the 1964 spring, the Du Bois Clubs formed part of what was called the Ad Hoc Committee Against Discrimination, which was a coalition of civil rights organizations that included the NAACP and the Congress of Racial Equality. And there were demonstrations at the Sheraton Palace Hotel in San Francisco, the Auto Row in San Francisco, and in the fall of 1964, we began protests at the Oakland Tribune. The two in San Francisco were successful. That is, we got the hotel industry and the auto sales industry to sign agreements with the Ad Hoc Committee to eliminate the pattern of discriminatory hiring. And in those actions, you can see, if you look back in retrospect, that, well, like in the Sheraton Palace, something like 300 people were arrested, and they were mostly students. So we were recruiting people from the Berkeley campus to come to San Francisco in order to participate in those actions. And a lot of people went south in the summer of 64 for the SNCC voter registration drive. So in retrospect, you can see the developing momentum of support and activity and sympathy with the civil rights movement.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me, over. over me.
And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home and my Lord and be free.
No more weeping, no
civil rights demonstrations caused a furor among conservative political leaders in the San Francisco Bay Area. Republican Senator William Nolan, publisher of the Oakland Tribune, put pressure on the university administration to stop political activity on the Berkeley campus.
It was also an election year, 1964, because the presidential election was Johnson versus Goldwater. Which was, if you think back to, I mean, in retrospect, we look at it and we elected Johnson and got Goldwater. I mean, that's it. But at the time that you were living it, it appeared as though the whole question of civil rights, the whole question of how much intervention there would be in Vietnam, a lot of issues would be decided by that election. That's how a lot of people looked at it. So it was a very hotly contested presidential race. And more importantly, in California, there was something called Proposition 14, which was on the ballot then, which, if it had passed, would have reversed fair housing legislation that Byron Rumford had passed through the California legislature in 1962. And that was also seen as a very important issue at that time, was to defeat Proposition 14 so that the fair housing law would be enforced in the state of California. So that you can see that the electoral issues also focused on civil rights activity, and of course the demonstrations at the Oakland Tribune were in full gear. There was no doubt in anybody's mind, therefore, that the reason the administration had acted was to cripple the civil rights movement.
Student political organizations had set up tables at the entrance to campus to distribute literature and solicit funds. On September 30th, 1964, the university administration suddenly prohibited the students from using the entrance to the campus for any more political activity.
That was when we had this united front of all the campus groups and we constituted ourselves. I was the representative from the Du Bois Club. We decided whether or not to move onto campus and decided we should. The reason was very obvious, which is that we weren't really fighting over 5 feet of turf. We were trying to establish the principle of the right of political activity on the campus. That's what became clear. And if we were fighting for that right, and if that was the principle around which we were going to organize a protest movement, then it was ridiculous to limit ourselves to a few feet outside what appeared to be the main gates. We might as well just move onto campus.
Are you prepared to remove yourself and the table from university property? Are you aware that by not doing so, you are subjecting yourself to probable disciplinary action? I must inform you, if you are a student, you are violating university regulations, and if you are a non-student, you are violating the trespass law. Will you identify yourself? You leave me no alternative but to ask Lieutenant Chandler to arrest you.
Mr. Van Houten,
you come with me then,
would
please.
You like to see our reg cards, sir? We'd be very glad, each one of us, to volunteer them to you and show it to
you. You're talking to all of them.
You, as of now, are under arrest, and either you'll come with me peacefully or we're going to take you. Either one, whichever you want to do.
Take all of us.
I'm talking to this person right here. You understand?
I was stunned, absolutely stunned. I was stunned at the time, and I'm stunned when I look back at it and think about it. It was the most unexpected, incredible thing to have happen. I was standing in the crowd. I remember the police car coming up onto, being driven up into the middle. I remember the police escorting Jack to the car and putting him in. And I remember that somebody shouted, "Sit down." and that I sat down.
Well, I'm walking down the line, walking down the line. I'm walking down the line, my feet will be a blind to tell you about my troubled mind. Got a heavy-headed guy. Heavy-headed gal, got a heavy-headed gal. She ain't a-feeling well. When she's better, only time will tell. And I'm walking down the line, walking down the line. I'm walking down the line. My feet'll be a-flying to tell you about my troubled mind.
After about the first hour, the dimensions of what was happening became clear. The first spontaneous action of sitting down was one thing, but then gradually it dawned on all of us that we had this car, and they had Jack, and we wouldn't give up the car until they gave up Jack, and we had him in a checkmate kind of thing. The police made several maneuvers in the middle of the night to try to get the car out. But we had stayed all night, and they couldn't do it. So we held it until 7 o'clock the following night. It was Friday, October 2nd at 7 o'clock that an agreement was reached between some of our people that had been hastily elected by the students occupying the car to meet with the administration, with Clark Kerr.
The student demonstrators shall desist from all forms of their illegal protest against university regulations. Number two, a committee representing students, including leaders of the demonstration, faculty, and administration, will immediately be set up to conduct discussions and hearing into all aspects of political behavior on campus and its control, and to make recommendations to the administration. Three, the arrested man will be booked but released on his own recognizance, and the university, which is the complainant, will not press charges. This is four. The duration of the suspension of the suspended students will be submitted within 1 week to the Student Conduct Committee of the Academic Senate, not to the administration. Five, activity may be continued by student organizations in accordance with existing university regulations.
The first lesson that people have to learn, and it's the most important lesson, is the idea of being able to stand together and win something. Most people don't know that they can do that. And you don't know that because, first of all, it's not taught. Second of all, it can't be taught out of textbooks. It's something you have to learn through experience. But that fact that we had hung together, and as a result of hanging together, had freed, Jack Weinberg, I think was psychologically and politically the single most important event in that movement. Because from then on, you knew that you could do it.
A little while ago, something happened to me when I was taking a walk through the old UC. In front of Spraw Hall, I was told to grab a seat when somebody gave me an apple to eat. So I ate it. Figured I better stick around, though, and find out what it was all about. Well, after I got done eating the fruit, I feel the heel of a combat boot. Is the cops all right and it's making their way to a car with a roof like a big ashtray. People on top of it, inside of it, all around it, bedpans out the window. Then and there was speeches they was making. All around me I could hear the eggs breaking, and the sulfur stinks and the X-lax in our drinks. I was wondering who would do these things. Found out though soon enough. The chancellor said, "You had it through." Said, "Ed, we ain't done with you." And that's why all the bearded bards are here, along with the frat man and their bear. Can't blame them, no. Only wanted to see law and order restored out west. The argument went on for several hours over who were the brave and who were the cowards, who in the right and who in the wrong. The cell of sulfur was still pretty strong. You know, someone said that extremism and the pursuit of liberty is no vice. Sounds right. The hour it was getting late, but the speakers are still insatiate, claiming they've been wronged and where's free speech. I was just glad I was out of reach of them football players. Well, I'm still listening to the heckler's curses, a new wave of stormtroopers trying to disperse us. It's for our protection, any fool could see, like the cops at the mass meetings in Mississippi. All in a day's work. Well, now that it's over and the smoke has cleared, up go the funniest stories I ever heard. They say that 40%, at least they know, are out-of-town agents of Fidel Castro. Mao Zedong. Didn't hear nothing about Khrushchev, though. Guess that's why they got rid of the old boy.
One day later, the administration reneged on the agreement and attempted to bring disciplinary action against the student activists. Negotiations began again, and demonstrations resumed. The administration tried to suppress any student activity that promoted civil disobedience. Students protested that this placed them in double jeopardy and that it violated their right to freedom of speech under the First and 14th Amendments. On November 27th, Chancellor Strong initiated disciplinary action against four students who had been involved in the October demonstrations.
The administration had in fact made a secret decision at the Regents' meeting to take disciplinary action against Mario and several other people. And they sent the letters out and they arrived over Thanksgiving. And that was it. That's what we needed. What we decided was that when we came back to school on that Monday, we would give the administration until Wednesday noon to rescind the disciplinary action. And if they didn't, we would occupy Sprout Hall.
Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. for her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. From Colorado, Kansas, and the Carolinas too, Virginia and Alaska, from the old to the new, Texas and Ohio and the California shore, tell me who could ask for more. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand. For here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all. Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all, on us all.
On December 2nd, Mario Savio spoke to a rally in front of the administration building, Sproul Hall. Afterwards, Joan Baez spoke, sang, and led a crowd of 1,100 into the building to begin the sit-in.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
The only thing that occurs to me, seeing all you people there, I don't know how many of you intend to come inside with us, but that is that you muster up as much love as you possibly can, and as little hatred, and as little violence, and as little angries as you can, although I know it's been exasperating. The more love you can feel, the more chance there is for it to be a success.
The students discussed what might happen to them.
I'm going to give instructions for all the contingencies. Nobody should be standing if the police come to eject us. When the police touch you, we request you to do two things: to ask if you're under arrest and to go limp. And it's very easy to go limp. You just sort of...
You know,
it's very easy to go limp. It's the easiest thing to do at that time. Now, if you are under arrest, it's going to be very easy. They're going to pick you up and carry you in a paddy wagon. No more instructions are necessary. In terms of what goes on down there, going down there, you give me your name and your address, and that's all. But more likely, they'll eject you. When you're carried out of the building and you're sat down, we're asking you not to get up then and trot off home. We're asking you to sit where you're left, or if anything, sit nearer to the door. So I repeat, we don't want any linking arms, We don't want any fighting with the cops. We don't want anybody hurt or any violent incidents.
At 7 p.m., the doors were closed and police announced that anyone that remained in the building did so in violation of the law. The police made no attempt to remove the students. The students showed films and a Hanukkah service was held, ending with a hatikva. At about midnight, Governor Edmund Brown announced, "I have tonight called upon the law enforcement officials in Alameda County to arrest and take into custody all students and others who may be in violation of the law at Sproul Hall." At about 3 a.m., Chancellor Strong arrived with an official statement.
"May I have your attention, please? I am Dr. Edward Strong, Chancellor of the Berkeley campus. I have an announcement. This assemblage has developed to such a point that the purpose and work of the university have been materially impaired. It is clear that there have been acts of disobedience and illegality which cannot be tolerated in a responsible educational center and would not be tolerated anywhere in our society. The university has shown great restraint and patience in exercising its legitimate authority in order to allow every opportunity for expressing differing points of view. The university always stands ready to engage in the established and accepted procedures for resolving differences of opinion. I request that each of you cease your participation in this unlawful assembly. I urge you, both individually and collectively, to leave this area. I request that you immediately disperse. Failure to disperse will result in disciplinary action by the university. Please go."
"Your attention, please. This is Lieutenant M.F. Chandler of the University of California Police Department. A condition of unlawful assemblage now exists under authority of Section 726 of the Penal Code of the State of California. And in the name of the people of the state of California, I command you to disperse. I further notify you that all persons who do not immediately disperse are in violation of the California state law and are subject to arrest. You have 5 minutes to leave the building or you will be arrested."
The elevator is stopped here up on the fourth floor. They're using a Polaroid camera and the police are taking pictures of each of them. Seems that they're not taking chances about misidentification. Looking down the corridor now, I see another demonstrator being picked up off the floor. He also has gone limp. The policemen are trying to lift him up. He slips out from under their arms. They're twisting. One arm is back in a hammerlock. The other arm is bent underneath him. And there, a third policeman has lifted his legs up and he's been carried face down into the elevator and has been placed on the ground. He's lying on his stomach. I think they're turning him over now. It's hard to see over the crush of people. They're using numbers printed on slips of paper. And the number they're holding up against his chest as they take his photograph is number 7. Another demonstrator is being moved along. This one hasn't gone completely limp.
"Gonna put my name down, brother, where do I sign? Sometimes you have to lay your body on the line. We're gonna make this campus free and keep it safe for democracy, so I'm gonna put my name down. We can't solicit funds. I thought, you know, that would be a hideous crime way down the road. I got a brother in a southern jail, and he needs money for his bail, so I'm gonna put my name down. We're gonna have Clark Kerr fired. I thought, you know, yes, we're gonna see him unemployed way down the road. We're gonna give him that good old deadline, make that headline or make that breadline. I'm gonna put my name down. Take the students back, they said. I thought, you knowed, at least until you've proven them guilty way down the road. Clarkhurst simply uttered no, the Constitution's read, you know. I'm gonna put my name down. Now we're gonna break the rules, I thought, you knowed. Yes, we're gonna talk and think way down the road. What do we want? Why the mess? The Constitution, nothing less. I'm gonna put my name down. I'm gonna put my name down, brother. Where do I sign? Sometimes you have to lay your body on the line. We're gonna make this campus free and keep it safe for democracy, so I'm gonna put my name down.
The arrest proceeded slowly, but by 8 the next morning, police became violent.
The entire contingent of Sheriff's Department people from Alameda County and California Highway Patrol have moved into the lobby area of the second floor. Some 30 patrolmen and the students continue to sit in on the floor. California patrolmen are moving in, led by an inspector in plain clothes, over the students, over the heads of the students who are seated down. They're moving very swiftly, pushing their way up over the seated demonstrators, stepping on them and kicking them. These are men of the California Highway Patrol and Alameda County.
Taken out their nightsticks. They're pushing on up. They're stepping over people. Hey, hold it. Those.
Pushing their way up.
Watch it. Watch it. Those kids, there are just kids sitting there. My
these
God.
Men of the California Highway Patrol.
Hey, hey, easy does it. Wow. They can make their way through. Jesus.
They've grabbed one kid and pushed him down the steps, beating him on the back of the head. It's a kind of gauntlet. They're kicking them and throwing them down the stairs. They're throwing them down the stairs and pushing them down the stairs out of the way. I don't know what's happening to these kids, but it looks horrible. They're tugging them by their feet and throwing them down the stairs, literally tossing them down the steps between them. There's a double line of cops directly in front of me. They're tossing them down the stairs. One of the police officials has just come over and shaken his head, said, go on, go on. They've cleared a spot. The cops in front of me are laughing. They've thrown boys and girls down the stairs, their heads jostling and banging against the banisters and marble stairs. One fellow was just going down slowly and was grabbed and pushed by one particular policeman here, directly in front of me. There's a cop here who's speaking to one of the kids sitting in the corner, directly to my left, who's refused to move. One kid is now being pulled feet first down the stairs. Some other cops are grabbing him. Well, we'll report this as the press. All right, okay. Well, we're moving. Fine, okay. All right, fine.
They can walk.
The police have ordered us to get out of the way until they've gotten this cleaned up.
Down?
We've just about been tossed down the stairs. They're pulling the kids down by their legs, bouncing them down the stairs. None of the kids that I've seen have fought back in any way whatsoever. The cops are turning around and going back. One of them has just kicked a shoe that was lying on the stair into the bunch of kids sitting down on the floor.
live in peace.
We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace someday. Oh, 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 live in my heart. I do believe we shall overcome.
That night and the following day, 780 students, faculty, and university employees were arrested.
I'm a student here, yes. I'm a junior. Nothing happened to me. Cop just grabbed me and pulled me down the stairs, and somebody else pulled me, grabbed my arm, and then I went limp, and then another grabbed my leg, and they jerked me, and then they, you know, shoved me down the stairs, and another said, can you walk? And I didn't answer. He said, well, all right then. And he grabbed me and shoved me down further. And a couple others grabbed me by the legs and shoved me down. But I did see, well, one cop hit a girl with his fist as hard as he could on the forehead.
Was there any provocation for that?
No. She was just sitting there.
Did you give any provocation?
No.
Yes, I'm a student here. I was sitting right by the banister at the top of the stairs, and as the policemen were going along the other side of the stairs, they were storming in there, and there was a lot of things happening behind me that I didn't even know. One sheriff's deputy was standing right in front of me, and he asked me, he started to step through, and I was sitting there, and he said, will you move? And I said, I'm sitting here. And he did strike me in the face with his open hand. Left no injury.
I'm a sophomore in the College of Letters and Science. A policeman had stepped on my thigh. I demanded that he look down and see what he was doing. He did and responded by jumping up and down on it. I could not find any numbers on any of the policemen. They apparently were not wearing them or were hiding them inside their coats.
Larry, did you offer any provocation?
No, I did not.
Yeah, well, the point here is that I, as you probably have already heard, we were blocked from any view of something that we were watching for a long time. I was standing very close to the window watching the kids, most of whom, at least half of whom, were being bounced down the stairs, some of them in extreme fashion. You can hear it right now. They're literally dragging him down. You can hear the bumping. And at this point, one of the policemen suddenly said, you, pointing to me, you stand away, get 15 feet away, and then I started to walk away, and he says, now, go on away, get out of the line here. So I was out of the line of vision, and then one of the ABC newsman, the American Broadcasting Company man, came over and said, look, we are supposed to be allowed to be at the point of production where the arrest is taking place. He said, that's what we do in San Francisco, and some large lieutenant said, well, that's not the way we do it over here, buddy.
Into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked and you say, who is that man? You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. Because something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You raise up your head and you ask, is this where it is? Then somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr.
strike was called and the faculty began to take sides. Then University President Clark Kerr called for a campus-wide convocation to discuss the issues.
He attempted, and to a certain extent succeeded, in seizing the initiative, and instead of letting the strike carry its own momentum, diverted attention from the strike by saying, well, classes are canceled anyway because we're going to have a university-wide meeting. On stage were all the chairmen of the departments. We sat down, and the convocation went on, and Kerr made his speech, which granted no concessions at all, and talked in vague terms about light and reason and peace and brotherhood and all that kind of stuff.
University, which has always stood for democratic principles, including observance of the law, expects faculty, staff, and students to carry on the orderly processes of the university and to reject what has become an FSM attempt at anarchy. The FSM issued an ultimatum which had nothing to do with free speech, and which it knew and publicly stated the university could not possibly accept. This ultimatum called for the abdication by the university of its responsibilities. The ultimatum was not accepted. The FSM then again seized Sproul Hall, as it had done before, and stated it planned to bring the university to a grinding halt. The FSM and its leaders from the start declared the police would have to haul them out. They are now finding that, in their effort to escape the discipline of the university, they have thrown themselves into the arms of the community at large. They have asked that they be subject only to external law and external courts. They are learning that the community is no more sympathetic with anarchy than the university they so violently condemn.
By having the chairman of the departments, you see, lined up on the stage, it was an effort to break the faculty meeting that was going to be held the next day and to show that the chairman of all the departments were behind the administration. And at the conclusion of Kerr's remarks, Scalapino adjourned the meeting, and no one got up to leave right away. And as he was adjourning the meeting, Mario walked up the steps. There were several of us with him, and he walked up the steps to make the announcement about where the rally was going to be held for the free speech movement. Of course, that was the moment of the great faux pas. Or perhaps they did it spontaneously. The police came and grabbed him by the neck and dragged him off backstage, and the complete pandemonium broke out. And what it did was it just stripped away all the hypocrisy of what Kerr had been talking about. You know, he just got finished making this speech, which had granted no concessions but sounded very conciliatory. And exactly that moment, here's the leader of the free speech movement, and they grab him by the throat and drag him off the stage, you know. That was a great tactical blunder by the administration. Of course, what that did, it didn't change what the sympathy was among the students, but what it did do was it switched the faculty vote. It completely undid what the convocation had been intended to do. And as you know, when the faculty met on December 8th, the vote was 824 in favor of what amounted to the free speech resolution, and 115 opposed.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Let me tell you a tale of campus sin, of tables and regents and a big sit-in, the day the students built a mountain atop a police car near Ludwig's fountain, defying law and order, thinking, God forbid. It all started out near Sather Gate. September 30th was the fateful date. The rebels sat in cans in hand, a threat to traffic on the Regent's land. Sabotage by the ISC, the Intercampus Slate Conspiracy. The rebels were ousted, the tables banned, the deans thought they had won their hand, and came a sight they never thought they'd see, a genuine sitting at the halls of Big C. Civil disobedience, an essay come alive, that's education in action for ya. Then Sproul Hall spoke in tones of woe, from our marble steps you'll have to go, we wouldn't threaten, but we'll tell you true, might be forced to suspend you too, policy you know. Regulations, we can back them up too, call out Nolan's police. The students left the steps that night, but returned to the tables in a show of might. Cops tried to split them, but to no avail, 400 gladly went to jail, or built their own. It's the kind of jail that's surrounded on all sides by prisoners. Then came a show of patriotic might, rotten eggs bursting by the dawn's early light, red-blooded lads of Fraternity Lane, proudly upholding Cal's great name, shouting, we want our car, we want our, we want, we. Friday Eve brought a glorious sight, 500 cops just itching for a fight. Clark was bluffing, Mario knew, but they signed a pact and the cops withdrew. They'll write a book about it, they'll call it a motorcycle for your thoughts. The FSM is now in action at the multi-U, there's a multi-faction. Free speech is coming cause some spoke out. To get all our rights we're gonna have to shout, but don't worry, it's okay if you wake the people up, cause morning's come.